for plant breeding. And so that's, yeah, conference on germplasm, genetic resources, and stuff like that. So no, she can't join today.
Okay, I think Pankaj just joined. Zoom always acts weird when he joins because we both log in on the same name, but it's, I think it's fine. Maybe that's why we get that squeaky squirrel sound. I don't know.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now, and you sound like a human being now, not a squirrel. We had that little squeaky thing happening there at the beginning. Yeah, okay, so good. I think, and Brandon, Dennis is away, correct?
Yes, he is away.
Yeah, so Brandon and Dario are there together. And so I was thinking today, I thought today we might have a little update from the garden, since last time you guys had to leave a little bit early and we didn't get to do that. So to make sure that we have time for that, let's do that first. And I'd like to talk about the peduncle change, the peduncle revisions. And then Austin, do you have some stuff to share with us today? Your mic is muted.
Sorry, muted. I noticed that right away. Yeah, I have a little run through of what I've been up to and some of the hurdles that we're going to encounter here.
Alrighty. So let's do those two things first. I'm going to turn on the recording or have the recording running. Good. And then we'll talk about the workshop and the Noctua stuff, because I'd like Justin Elser to be here for that. And he's just dropping his kids off and he'll be here as soon as he can. So why don't I turn this over to Brandon and Dario?
Sure.
So you guys introduce your news and everything that's going on out there.
Yeah. So the first bit that I should start with in an update is that I will be leaving the project. It's been great working with everyone, but I've accepted another postdoc and we'll be starting that on June 1st.
Right.
So,
congratulations.
Yeah, good job, man.
It was fun working with you.
Yeah, it's been a really, really fun, rewarding, and nice intellectually challenging thing to go through all these terms and, you know, have a very serious crash course in plant anatomy and morphology and refresher and all that. So it's been really great. That's my bit of news.
What kind of project are you moving to?
I'm going to be working on a nuclear genome evolution in orchids.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so some of the stuff that I worked on for my dissertation was organeller genome, by and large, genomics. So mitochondrial chloroplast genome, and how rearrangements and inversions and things like that happen in a phylogenetic context. And yeah, my new advisor works on that in orchids. So I'll be moving into a new system too, which should be really fun.
So Brandon, how will you be here through the end of May then? Or?
So my official last day at the garden is May 19th.
19th, okay.
Yeah, that's when payroll stops for me here.
Yeah.
And then my first day of work is the 1st of June.
Yeah, so that'll give you a chance. Are you relocating?
Yeah, it's in West Virginia. So it's at West Virginia University in Morgantown.
Oh.
So yeah, moving from a place with 21 million people to a place with like 60,000 people. It'll be a fun adjustment, but I'm from the country originally, so it's not an issue to be in the sticks for me.
That's cool. Well, and you can take your knowledge of the plant ontology and the ontology world that you've learned to your new position. And
no, I think it'll be useful for sure.
I hope so too. And you're continuing to work on the fruit paper?
I am. Yeah. I've continued working the fruit paper, and I've taken, well, with Dario and Dennis, a couple paraderm sort of issues that we thought of when we were looking at the sweet potato stuff, and we moved into carrots and started playing around with wound paraderm scars there. So I'm hoping that'll be a paper too. I've been working on both of those at the same time. So.
And then, Dario, do you want to share your news?
Yeah, I don't.
I'm really sad. You guys are both leaving. No, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I have a similar announcement. I'm leaving the project as well. I accepted a position as conference production director, producing or coming up with the agendas for conferences in the pharmaceutical and biotechnology industry. So very different from my work here at the garden, but it's been an absolute pleasure. And I really did like this crash course as well. It's something that I had a bit of experience with working with Dennis in the past, but nothing like what I've had to do in the last year. So this is, it's been fantastic, but unfortunately I'm leaving as well.
Congratulations to you too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It sounds really exciting, and I think you're going to be wonderful at that. I'm very organized and outgoing, and we could use a conference organizer around.
Thank you. It's a new trajectory for me, but I think that it utilizes a lot of skills that I don't get to use in this current role, which I'm excited about.
Yeah. And you're going to travel around and go to these conferences and stuff. That sounds really exciting. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Are any of you guys coming for in 2 weeks or not?
No, I won't be able to. This work started for me as June 1st, so unfortunately, I won't be able to go. Yeah.
And I'll have started my new job by then as well.
Okay. That was quick.
Yeah, I wanted to make the, I think we both wanted to make this announcement at the last meeting. We just didn't have, we had to leave early and then we didn't have an opportunity to talk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I hope there's some backup plan from Dennis, right?
I hope so too.
Yeah. Uh-huh. All right.
Yeah.
Good luck, guys.
We both turned our resignations in and all of that. So he should be set to rehire if he wants to or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll work with him. No worries.
Yeah, we'll work with him. And
take care. So, good luck.
Back on the 15th.
Yeah, but Dennis will be back on the 15th from Paris. Yep. So one thing we had Dario and I met on Friday and we're talking about this, and Dario's been working on some images for the fruit types. And I just want to mention, I don't know if you guys probably talked about this, but I made a folder in the Dropbox.
Mm-hmm.
So we can start putting those images in there.
Come.
We can, I don't know, Brandon, you and I maybe need to meet later this week and kind of talk about the fruit types work. And
sure thing.
Yeah. And the other thing I wanted to mention, it's really important that both of you, all these Google Docs we're working with, if you could go and transfer ownership of those to me. Because we've had problems in the past when people leave the project and then the Google Docs, I don't have control over the sharing or anything.
Okay.
Yeah, there's quite a few of them actually, with some are Dario's and some are yours, Brandon.
Okay.
Yeah, but if you guys could make sure you get that. And, you know, I'm kind of concerned about the amount of unfinished work on the PL, you know, stuff that got started and didn't get done.
Okay.
So we talked about this a little bit on Friday, and I kind of tagged a couple of things on the GitHub issue tracker about this. And so, yeah, we'll have to, maybe Brandon and I could meet again this week and kind of go over that. I don't want to drag this out too much, but there is quite a bit of work left to be finished on, you know, the work that was started. So we'll talk about the peduncle today. And then, so.
Laurel?
Mm-hmm.
So about that downstream document, we've gone through that and made all the adjustments, and we're happy to just upload or make those edits like as soon as possible if that works. I think that's the bulk of them.
Right. Well, one of the things, I mean, the thing that I'm kind of most concerned about is the infructescence axes and branches that haven't been done. So because that was all changed in the inflorescence, and so we need to have the parallel work done. So, you know, it may end up that it has to be done here, but we just have to make sure that we don't like do this halfway and then leave it unfinished.
Yeah, of course. I have an infructescence document with like a proposed parallelization of those terms.
Right.
When we meet, we can go through that and see if you like my solution to that.
Yeah, I mean, it should be basically the same. It's just a matter of going through carefully and cleaning everything up. And
yeah.
So, well, it's been, and it's been really fun and helpful working with you guys. It's been great.
Yeah, same to you.
Yeah, I'm kind of sad. On Friday, I was like, oh, really? Like, they're both leaving? Dang. Yeah. So, any other news from down there that you want to talk about, or should we?
No.
Yeah, peduncle proposal here. I have it on. Oh, let me share my screen. I was thinking I had it shared, but I don't. Can you see my screen now?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, good. So I'll let you talk about this, Brandon.
Okay, so the general gist of what was going on here, you mean that?
Yeah, like just a little background of why we need to fix spike lipedicil.
Yeah, so
On this image you see at the top of Laurel's screen here, this figure, there's a portion at the basal end of that second order inflorescence axis called spikelet pedicel. Yeah, exactly where her cursor is. And the problem is this isn't really a pedicel. And we had talked a little bit about what to do with this term, how to rename it. Dennis liked diminutive forms of pedicel and or peduncle. And I proposed maybe naming it spikelet peduncle, since the most basal portion, or I should say most proximal portion, of an inflorescence axis, or the first order inflorescence axis, is the peduncle. So this is essentially the first internode on a higher order inflorescence axis. Here it's a spikelet, and it's basically directly analogous to, I think, the peduncle of the entire inflorescence. So I propose naming it spikelet peduncle.
Yeah. So I'm going to scroll down in a second here, but I wanted to show people what the current definition and it was originally called an inflorescence branch, which we had changed to axes, higher order inflorescence axis. But even in the comment, it said it's not a pedicel in the strict sense. So it really did need to be visited. So here's the proposed solution.
Yeah. So spikelet peduncle, revised definition, a higher order inflorescence axis that bears a spikelet. So again, this is the most proximal portion of an entire spikelet. Mm-hmm. So we thought maybe the bears word here, like when we talked about the pedicel and flower and fruit and all of that, might be useful. We revised the comment, a spikelet peduncle is the most proximal axis internode of a spikelet. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we come up with so far.
That would be fine, and the spikelet pedicel would become the synonym.
Yes.
Yeah, we could make that a scene. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I can put that in there too. And then in peduncle, I remember the comment needed some work, right?
Yeah, I think we need to revisit probably the whole definition of peduncle and spikelet.
Yeah, I did some work on spikelet actually, and when we meet, I can show you what I did with that. I realized yesterday that I hadn't worked on spikelet.
Yeah. Itself, so. And because we have, because the way things work in the PO, of course, we have the spikelet pedicel term, but then we also have these child terms of it. And so these ones will also be, will do something similar. So this will be the peduncle of the ear spikelet.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then we'll revise these to match, and the peduncle of the tassel spikelet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll carry those through. And then there's some pictures of the different kinds of, I think this is where you were working on spikelet.
No, actually it was in the downstream deck.
I'll paste it in there. Going on.
Yeah. I'll replace that spikelet with what I was working on. Yeah. Yeah. I was working in the document.
Do you have a revised definition?
I do. I could read it. I have that open somewhere here. One moment.
Is it one of the other Google Docs I can open it?
Yeah, it's the branch/axis downstream terms that you looked at with Dario on Friday, I believe.
Yeah.
Spikelet, yeah.
There we go. It's not too hard to find.
There we go.
Okay.
Yeah, and it is on page... Page numbers. I don't have page numbers. If you go to my cursor, you will.
Oops, if I can spell it. Yeah, that's what I can do. There we go.
There we are. Okay. So this is just a shot I gave it yesterday because we, in our definitions, we want to use singular forms as much as possible, right? I just want to make sure that.
Right, absolutely.
Okay. So I had some trouble playing with it, but this is what I came up with. A higher order inflorescence axis bearing at least one spikelet floret that is subtended by at least one glume, lemma, and paleo. What do you think?
Let me look at the diagram of the other one.
Okay.
So in our diagram here, the paleo, this is the lemma here, and that's
maybe I could say bearing. Yeah, I do say okay, bearing at least one spike of flora.
Are there any cases where they're here? I'll fix the
oh, yeah, My spell checker is not underlining things for some reason in my document. I don't know what the deal is.
Maybe it's So you're changing this from a reproductive shoot system to a higher order inflorescence axis.
Yeah, because I can't find a case where the spikelet is an entire inflorescence. Mm-hmm. I always see spikelets as part of, especially panicles. Yeah.
Let's just look at the definition of this and see what this...
Yeah, or even in like the, when we were talking about corn the one day, when Pankaj showed that the glooms, you know, are subtending each of these individual spikelets of a single floret in the cob. Yeah, so that's like a bunch of spikelets in a spike.
So what I would propose is let's put this on the, let's put this proposed solution on the tracker and, okay. I think I'd like to think about this a little bit more because I'm not sure why this, the reproductive shoot system is a pretty high level term.
Okay.
Because we're changing it actually from a shoot system to an individual axis.
Yeah. And that relationship I think is really important. I mean, not saying that this one is absolutely correct or something. This is just how I'm thinking of it. But I, if I'm right, I think that's like, it would be sister to inflorescence, right? Inflorescence lives under reproductive shoot system, correct?
So, yes. Right. Yeah. Right now, it's this. They're still siblings because inflorescence is a reproductive shoot system.
Yeah.
Spikelet is a reproductive shoot system.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I couldn't.
And so it would no longer be a sibling.
Yeah. Yeah, but I can't think of an example where a spikelet is not part of an inflorescence and is ever part of the primary, you know, branch as you had it before, how we have it now, the first order inflorescence axis. Yeah. I think it's always a second order or higher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But so, and so your definition is saying that it has to include at least one.
The glooms demark the beginning of a spikelet.
At least one spikelet floret. If it seems like it works.
Okay. Yeah, I asked, I was asking around a little bit, and people that work on grasses here yesterday, and it seemed fine, but I just need to check with, I just need to keep checking, basically. And I didn't know if you'd like the format or not, how it was worded.
Are there any, would there ever be a case where it doesn't have a gloom or a lemur?
I couldn't find any, yeah. No one that I asked could think of a case. And I myself couldn't find any.
Like the lemon and the paleo are part of the floret.
Yeah, they're the bracts immediately subtended.
Right.
And
well, I think we can put it out there, and I wouldn't mind getting Dennis's input on it. I don't know if you've talked with Dennis about it, but
in the past I did, but not specifically about if there are any exceptions to the gloom lemon paleo business. And so I'll put a comment on it to make a tracker, and then I'll talk to him about it when he comes back.
I believe we have a tracker for spikelet. We should.
Okay. I can also check to see if there's which tracker I should put it under or something.
There we go. Yeah, we actually have two of them, so let's not create a new one. Let's go.
Okay.
I think I would use this most current one, which is actually not very current. But yeah, there is a couple available there. So yeah, so that's good. Let's post that on the tracker and we'll consider that, and maybe we can get that wrapped up and finished. But I think the peduncle part is good.
Okay.
And we had a proposal to maybe update the peduncle definition as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is the existing peduncle, a shoot axis that extends from the last foliage leaf on a stem or branch until the next distal node. That definitely needs to be revisited. And I think the comment's okay, except for this thing about the peduncle ending with a flower in plants with single flowers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because that's a flower pedicel.
Flower pedicel, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds good. I think
okay.
Looks like we can wrap that up fairly simply.
Okay. So you can go ahead and add the spikelet peduncle into the PO when I have a chance.
Yeah, I think that'd be good. And we probably have a tracker open for that one as well. We can just update and.
Sure, I'll search for one.
Yeah. Any comments, Pankaj, on those?
No, I'm fine.
Okay, good. Great. All right. So do you have any other issues you want to discuss, Brandon?
Nope.
So why don't we move on and Austin's going to give us a little update on what he's been doing.
Okay.
Great. Thanks so much for all your work on this stuff.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah.
It was an awesome experience.
Fantastic.
You're welcome to come back and just volunteer your time after your job ends.
You know, if we ever need to do some consulting, if it's useful.
If you get bored, you know, and want to do some ontology work, come on back.
Okay.
Have GitHub, you know, you have your GitHub
stuff. Yeah, go ahead and do talk to Dennis about the consultancy if you're interested.
Okay.
Until we have a backup plan.
Sure. Yeah.
At least.
Yeah. You know, and as you proceed in your work, I don't know if it would work so much for Dario in your new job, but in your work, Brandon, you may run across things that you think we need to add in the PO and you know, keep in touch for sure. Mm-hmm. And we'll work together for the next couple of weeks until you wrap up there and have to make your big shift. I'm sure you've got lots of details to look after.
Yeah, there are quite a few. Yeah. But thank you very much, both of you, for that.
Yeah, no, it's been fun.
I might take advantage of that. I'm sure they're going to find new things. I'm working at parasitic plants, so I'm sure there'll be a lot of morphological features that might not be one-to-one that could be useful additions. So.
Yeah, I don't think we've really dealt too much with parasites.
That would be nice. And obviously those parasitic plant leaf features and things like that would be helpful. And in the meantime, did we receive another request to create a stock which from Ari Casey that carries both the male and the female flowers in Aspetix?
Yes, a lady from the garden actually contacted us, and I replied to her and gave her the link to the tracker, and then I mentioned this to Dario, and Dario's going to get in touch with her. Did you get a chance to talk with her?
I ran into her this morning, and we're going to speak about it, but we haven't had a chance to talk about it yet. I told her that I'll show her how to use the tracker and everything.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
But so let's say if it's in the flower, we would be able to add a term there, right?
Yeah, I think so. It was gyno, I don't remember the name of it.
Is it gynophore?
No, it was, she sent it through the contact form. Let me just, I don't have it right off the top of my head.
She did talk to me about a term in the last week or so. So it was probably that term.
Oh, she did, yeah?
Yeah, she was asking me if I knew what a word. It was this gynophore word and what that meant to me. And we were talking about it a while ago. She must.
So if you guys could follow up with her and, you know, help her make that request, that'd be great. And then we could deal with it.
She's just down the hall, so we should be able to find her.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay.
Great. So Austin, I've stopped sharing my screen. Do you want to share yours?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. Let's figure out how to do that. How's that? Can you guys see what's going on here? Okay, how long do you want me to ramble for?
Let's see, who are the participants here?
Chris and Barry aren't here.
I want to spend some time with Seth and Justin Elser as well to go for the Noctua thing.
Okay, so I'll just do a quick update and kind of show you guys where.
About 15 minutes for you.
That's, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Totally fine.
This is great.
All right. So I've been working on the plant stress ontology, or I've been calling it temporarily ontology of plant stress. Nothing that I'm going to show is set in stone. There's been nothing officially pushed. I think it's housed in my personal repository right now, so it's not even on the Plantium repository. And so the biggest thing that we're going for is a way to almost completely automate the ontology so that when updates happen, as they do quite frequently in the plant disease area, names of species, names of different diseases coming from new species and things like that, that we can simply just rerun the script with an updated set of information that we pull from professional sources like APS. And so the linchpin of this whole plan right now as it stands is that that plant stress as a concept is defined as a process, a biological process, so it fits into the hierarchy in that sense. So it is defined in sort of loosely in this way. It's a biological process of some plant, and so right now it's whole plant. We've only used whole plant, but and then it's like an NCBI term, caused by an exposure to an environment containing some stressor agent. So that second half, we'll get into how that kind of fits into the plan, but little background quickly. Jorrit was hired to do web scraping of APS, which we were having undergrads do for a while. And so he pulled down basically everything from the APS website and placed it into a file for me to analyze and process further. And it just pulls down the name as it was on the site, the host and the pathogen, and those are mapped then. The host is mapped to an NCBI number, and the pathogen is also mapped to an NCBI number. And this is done automatically as of now, and it's somewhat proof checked, but it's not 100%. And then the name comes down from APS, and it's, I won't show any examples, but it comes in kind of a weird format sometimes. Sometimes it's spot on, it's of other jargon in it, and I'm not sure. That's mostly because APS has the format of the pages at APS is not consistent. There's not really a tabular form that they use, so it's kind of tricky. I'm impressed at what Jorrit has actually done to get it to the way it has. As Lowell would be informed about is the old PDO, there was a lot of work done to get that into shape, and so we didn't want to just throw all that work away. So we have, luckily Marie is very good at using Sparkle queries to basically interpret what we had previously, and basically we take everything that could be mapped to that same pattern, and we just bring it down and change it into the pattern that I discussed earlier. So it hunts for the word cause, the key phrase caused by, and then whatever is following that is determined to be the pathogen. And so then that tries to get mapped to an NCBI term. So then there was a list of like weird ones that couldn't actually be mapped, and those are in a tabular file that I've been working through by hand. And I'll show you that if we have time, but there's some issues and there's some generalities that happen in those sets that make them unable to match the term or unable to match the pattern which we laid out for. And so that's how that goes. So here's kind of like the 20,000 feet view of how I see the future of this whole thing working. So at the top, you have plant stress, and that's, the generalized plant stress, and it's broken into two categories, abiotic, biotic. And then under biotic, we have, can you guys see my mouse, by the way?
Yep. Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, so under biotic plant stress, you get diseases, and then you also have the herbivory there, hardest word ever to say. And then, of course, we have abiotic plant stress, and these kind of fall into two categories. I haven't done really anything on the abiotic plant stress side. I've been focusing mainly on the disease ontology because it's from the Samaras scrape. And so here's a disease pattern.
Biotic stress, there could be another one, which is mutualists.
Mutualists.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like the gymnosperms have a lot of blue-green algae and other stuff, and there are other pathogens, there are other bacteria. Unless there is a pathogenic reaction, they stay as bacteria.
Okay, and they could be considered plant stress.
Yeah, obviously they are providing the stress in some ways. It's kind of herbivory, but in a different way.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And okay, so it's important to note that this top half, the higher level, is actually this is the only part that's manually curated. So that's mainly, let's see if I have it up here. So the manual curation is done also in the tabular form. I don't know if you guys were present at that meeting we had a little while ago with Chris and Seth, where they're working on that tool to just edit tabular format then convert it. Yeah. That's the one. Nice. I forgot the name.
That's nice.
So that's basically how the top level of this pyramid is formed, or hierarchy is formed. So that can all be changed fairly readily, so long as we don't break the pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And so the pattern we have currently, it's kind of complicated because it's kind of a weird thing. It's plant disease process has a participant that's just some host. It's causally downstream of, and that's a weird relationship, some exposure event, and has exposure stressor some pathogen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that works in both ways, and we can just plug NCBI numbers in here for pathogen and KEBI numbers in here for the abiotic stresses as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also interesting to note that I don't know if this will change, but currently the only thing in here that's host specific is diseases. Herbivory might have some host specificity, but I basically think if something is eating a plant, it doesn't matter what plant is being eaten, but that may be subject to change with some weird examples later.
Yeah, I think we can revisit that as we have more information about it.
Yeah.
Sorry, what were you saying, Pankaj? I didn't hear your comment, sorry.
I was just mentioning how plant diseases are the only ones that actually have a host specificity.
There may be some cases with the herbivory.
See, I told you that's a tough one.
Especially for I had one comment here. In terms of your abiotic stress pattern, they may not all be KEBI related.
Right.
They have like drought or heat. And you know,
and so I'll get into this a little bit when I show the actual patterning, but this was just sort of an example show you how the pattern is used, and you just sort of swap out entities in the pattern in the fields that can be swapped.
Right.
Because it will still, even if it is heat, you know, it will still be some exposure event that has a stressor, some
and then you
heat
can
or something
term from the EO there.
Right, that could be EO, that could be, and you'll see this end up being EO terms in a lot of cases. So here's how the PDO, the upper level of the disease ontology looks right now. Actually, there's a couple more that I've added. This is an old version, but this is just sort of generalistically how I have it broken down. You know, in these larger categories here, and then, you know, progressively smaller categories under here. I didn't really know if we should keep insect plant disease in there, as that's more of an herbivory thing, but it does carry disease. So this is an interesting case.
Yeah, but it's actually the pathogen that's causing the disease, the insect vector.
Exactly. So it's kind of an interesting case because there's not usually insects are mentioned in reference to like carrying virus or bacteria or something, but.
I think there are, in rice you would have the green or brown plant hopper resistance.
Exactly. So there are a few.
Not just herbivory, but it's also, obviously it is somehow connected to herbivory because they're all, actually fungus also eats on the plant. So herbivory is everywhere.
Yeah.
That's the reason these pathogens are on the plants is because that's their immediate food source.
Exactly. So it's, you can see, the lines blur.
I would leave it as it does insect.
Yeah, I don't know about calling it a disease. Also, the parasitic plant. We need another category. Maybe not under disease. I don't know.
Which one?
Well,
parasitic plant.
I would call it a disease, you know. I think Barry would probably have a comment on that. You know,
and like I said, this is subject to change. These could be moved out. These could be moved out and put into a more general category above in like biotic plant stress.
Yeah, that might be a good thing to do.
But that's just how I have them now because it was simple to categorize based on just host.
So oomycetes are not fungus?
No, they're fungal-like protists.
Okay.
Yeah. They act very much like fungi, but they are in fact eukaryotes.
Okay.
And this is important because all of this is based on the NCBI hierarchy.
Right.
So you don't actually have to build this hierarchy. You just pick the upper term and it puts it all into place.
Wonderful.
It's actually quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have it. So here's how the diseases are defined currently. And this is very temporary because it's just, it was the easiest way to go. And currently in the old PDO, we have like the parent term, you know, your genus differentia style by, and then this causal agent. And so with the applying the pattern, we use this like plant experimental condition containing a pathogen as the exposure, as what the exposure is being, or what the plant is being exposed to, the event is this exposure. So basically every plant disease is an example of a plant being exposed to an environment or an experimental condition that contains the pathogen. So you guys probably remember me being very stubborn about having all three of the plant or all three of the plant pathology triangle in their host pathogen and environment. And this does it very neatly by ensuring that the pathogen doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's always in an experimental condition or an environment that contains it. So that was kind of a neat little solution that we discovered, but this also requires that all of those environments and conditions exist in the EO, which I don't think is a problem. So naming them is a little, go ahead.
So what are you going to do about all the pathogens that are in EO?
So that's a subject of debate because, Marie.
You're going to find that a lot of these causal agents may not have NCBI numbers.
Ah, that were in PDO that are in EO.
Well, there's some in EO and...
Yeah, but in EO, they are not really pathogen. They are really like experimental condition that contain the pathogen. I think the naming was misleading, so...
No, but listen, the thing is, not every species that you're referring to is actually pathogen unless the reaction is pathogenic.
Right.
It depends on the isolate, the variety of that particular species that and depends on the host.
And depends on
definitely.
The so it is still, so you cannot define it as a pathogen in the EO.
This is not defined as pathogen.
It won't be.
Yeah, but this is more easy here to, in order to make a difference between the species that are like the host and the species that are the pathogen, to have this kind of distinction. But basically, it's just an experimental condition that contains a species.
Yeah, I shouldn't have put pathogen there just out of confusion. It's an experimental condition containing a species.
Yeah.
Right? And so... I just used the word pathogen because that's how the pattern recognizes that as the pathogen when I apply it. Mm-hmm. So it's really, you can have a lot of EO terms. Like this could be anything. This could be humans, right? A experimental condition containing Homo sapiens, right? And then that EO term would typically not be used in a disease term, but it could exist as a condition in which you're applying an experiment to. I don't know.
Yeah. So a plant experimental condition containing a disease-causing agent.
No, it will just be a species. This will literally just be containing species.
I don't know if it's containing either, but...
The actual...
Or something, because this is your experimental condition is a planned process, and so you probably want to use an actual...
Right, I think it has a... Yeah, there is one. This is an old slide, I think.
Participant.
Yeah, right, that's exactly... There is a... we talked with Chris about it. There's one... It's going to take a little bit of digging to get the actual relationships of this correct. Mm-hmm.
So go ahead and start moving. I think we don't want to get hung up on this.
Yeah. Don't get hung up on the details. I think it's important to note that all of those things are very, very easily changed. Mm-hmm. So naming them is kind of weird because I said they come down from Sumeria and they come down with weird kind of names. And so I showed you how they're currently named, kind of genus differentia style. Mm-hmm. But we have a little bit of an issue. This is how I would do it. Just computationally, it would be easy to do, except you get some weird overlaps where you have, like, for example, Rice Pythium root rot fungal disease or Rice Pythium leaf spot fungal disease. These two terms to the ontology are equivalent classes using the pattern. But because they're named something differently, root rot fungal disease or leaf spot fungal disease, the ontology really doesn't care that they're named differently. It's just the pattern that causes them is the same. It's a rice disease caused by exposure to Pythium, right? So the names, currently how I'm doing it is I'm making the name, the second name, just a synonym of the first.
But it's
so that they will be findable.
Right, but it's a different disease.
But it's really...
No, I would keep it separate. I would keep it separate because the symptoms, when you start adding the traits that are observed are different.
Yeah.
Right. So this is where it gets very complicated, because Rice Pythium root rot and Rice Pythium leaf spot are essentially the exact same thing, just it depends on where the Pythium is infecting the plant.
Right. Right.
I think I like this case. So is another case there as well?
No, there's a couple examples of this. It's not really, there's not a lot of it that happens, but it does happen a little bit. And so we need to think of a way to apply a different pattern or the same pattern or add a piece to the pattern that's allows us to differentiate between these two things.
So the only way right now to find out that these are synonyms is because they have the same host and causal agent is the same.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there are different parts of the plant.
And
right.
I somewhat go with
Pythium causes a lot of different.
Lol is because it might be root. So many times these diseases depend on at what stage the plant is infected, and
definitely
what part is infected. So I think clubbing them together might create problem.
Right. So that's one of the bigger issues that I have in doing the pattern the pattern that we currently have. And so if we can apply something to it.
So in the first round, if we keep them separate and if we really think that they should be joined, then it's easier to make them join rather than keeping them making them separate later on.
Right. I agree. You're right. So, but since currently they will not be separated, so we would need a different pattern to make that difference apparent.
Yeah, maybe the plant part that is.
Yeah, so I had a plant part earlier in the disease, but that could be.
And I can help with, finding those in the list and finding
that. Yeah. Yeah. Because otherwise it would be like I would have to manually go through, the 1,000 diseases that we have and find out which plant part each one of them is affecting. And I'm not an expert in all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But if they could be pulled from the scrape or something, that would make it easy. So.
I think that you definitely don't want to combine these because, I mean, if we start looking at genes that are involved and so on, I mean, things are going to be quite different between leaf spot and root rot.
Okay. So two more minutes, and then we need to move to Noctua.
No, that's totally fine. I just have a couple more things I want to bring up about the issues that are possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so I personally would like a way to add additional environmental factors. Not just a path, not just an environment containing the species that is considered the pathogen, but also, like what percentage of water or what percentage of heat other things that make an environment conducive to the disease. And so currently I don't know exactly, I honestly have no idea how that would happen, but I was hoping there would be some sort of maybe a relationship that we could add and have another leg of the ontology that just is.
So you basically want a disease causing environment that has part the pathogen pathogenic species and
right.
other environmental factors.
But I would like to be able to do it. I would not like to have to define that for every single species, because some they don't know. You know, some it's not well. This part of it is not well defined. So I'd like to just have an environment containing this as a single term, and then an environment containing this as a separate term, and then in places where we know that both of them are needed, both of them can be put into the term.
But the question here is, the ontology does not carry the amount of humidity; it just carries the term humidity. It doesn't
right.
say anything about, because that is a score, right?
And so that's where it becomes tricky.
Yes. So I would, for the moment, I think I would just leave it aside for the moment.
Okay. Yeah. And these are things that are not like immediate distressful issues. I think what we have now actually will work in its current standing. But like you said, we need to change the pattern so it can differentiate between some of these equivalent classes.
Yeah.
And then all you can add the symptoms part, I feel like is where the usefulness of this ontology will get a lot of traction. And it would be nice if we had a well-defined way to add symptoms or traits, but it wouldn't be traits. It would actually be like an actual
and you can have
value.
You can have traits and then the CO scores.
Yeah, we could have a value of those traits somehow in there. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of up on the my radar. I haven't quite figured out how to manage that. And then we also have a quite a few diseases that are caused by either like a couple of different species or
yeah,
like things that, where they just say, oh, this is caused by Fusarium species or Pythium species, right? So the problem is when this gets put into the hierarchy, then anything that is caused by a specific Pythium becomes a child of this upper term, which is obviously not correct.
I think we should remove the genetic one. if a more detail, if any of these their children is available in that list, then the genetic one goes away.
That's an easy solution, but it's
in
not as satisfying as I'd like it to be.
Yeah, we can keep thinking about that. My advice is kind of work on the lower hanging fruit first and then tackle the bigger problems.
Right. So I think the lower hanging fruit is almost already taken care of. I have the hierarchy in place here. Here it is right here. You get plant biotic, plant disease, bacterial plant disease. You open that up, you get all of your plant diseases here and eukaryotic, you get the set of those, your Samoomyces and stuff.
So imported from PDO.
These are the ones that I imported from PDO, yeah.
Because they look very familiar.
Right. Well, I would have put the other ones in there, but the list gets very long. So we might need to we might need a better way of organizing it. Once you open up like fungal plant diseases, like mm-hmm. see how big this is?
Yeah, you probably need some hierarchy in there.
Right. So I'm thinking.
You can create a.
It's like a picket.
You can go by maize fungal diseases.
Right. But even that will end up with these, I mean, because already look, everyone in here is maize except for these bottom like
yeah.
15. So maybe it's a way that if we do plant part, it will break down very nicely actually.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. That's good. That's good. No.
PDO had broken it down by species, host species.
Yeah. Yeah. We did species first,
yeah.
But it's, I think that's odd.
I have to cut you guys down here.
Anyway, that's fine.
Working on that. So Justin Elser and Seth, now it's your turn. And
let me stop sharing. There you go. It's all yours, guys.
Elser?
Yeah,
Hi.
Where, what's the progress on the Noctua, and are there anything that we need from Seth to work on or Seth to coordinate? And Lol, where is your SOPs? What state?
My SOP is in progress. I have a document that I'm working on, and I have a few questions actually. So maybe Justin and Seth could tell us what the latest updates are in terms of.
From my end, I've managed to get our own version of the Neo installed and running.
What's that?
It's where we can add our own gene sets.
Okay.
So that when you like go to add an individual.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can
create Noctua.
Yeah, I can do ones that come from our data sets rather than just goes.
So it gets connected to the Amigo database?
No, it's separate. It crawls through all of our association files and then creates an ontology, a sort of flat ontology based on that.
Mm-hmm.
So far all I've added is the PO tear genes.
Okay. So that way you could put them in this box and it would search for it. So
one of the things I need to know though is which ones do you want? Because I don't think we necessarily want to put everything in there because it kind of makes it, I mean, the Go file is large and ours will be larger.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
So I think we would kind of want to pick a few species or a few association files specifically to choose from to have loaded. Mm-hmm. And once I know which ones you guys want, I can redo it pretty quickly.
So the question is, like, which gene sets do we want to include?
Yes.
Okay, so in that...
Specifically, which association files do you want?
So let's focus on rice and Arabidopsis.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I figure. And like you said, there is rice in there from Go, but I can add the PO ones as well.
No, so is it okay if I give you guys the tab delimited files where you can actually create whatever ontology file you wanted? Because obviously the Go association file has the data only for the genes that have been annotated. But they are...
That would maybe take a little more work. The stuff is already set up to take it from an association file.
So if we give you
or something called a GPI, but I haven't seen those before, so I don't know what those are.
So what happens if I just create a mock association file?
I don't know. I'd have to test it.
That, do you have any idea?
Yeah, no. So I think that would generally work. So just to like give a little bit more background for that. So Neo, the Noctua entity ontology, is essentially just a way of us tricking an Amigo instance, a Golar instance, into sort of loading, you know, arbitrary data so people can get their identifiers for annotation. So any way you can just sort of lie and jimmy that in should work. The GPI file.
I looked that closely. I guess I could look and see which columns from the GAF it's reading from and then just populate those ones.
Yeah. I mean, it should be, I would guess it would be pretty easy to I'm sorry, make mock GAFs. As well, I think the GPI loader should work as well. And I think Chris is currently has a mechanism for loading the GPIs directly if you just
have the... Yeah, he actually tries to default to using GPI from what I read, but we don't. So I've been just using the GAFs.
Right, but have you taken a look at the GPI format yet?
No.
Yeah, you might want to take a look at that because you might find it easier just to create those than to create mock GAFs. But okay. either one should work. But you're just trying to sort of by hook or by crook create a way of.
And we had GAFs, so that's where I started. So.
Yeah. No worries.
Right. And the reason means there is a short term and a long term. If I think if we can maintain these gene ID files as an ontology files, that is fine, because it will actually help our curators in some ways to use these files in a different mechanism there where they can use them for maintaining as a nomenclature files. because then they don't have to worry about pulling names and IDs. They can just go ahead and use these files to edit and add new names and synonyms and things and still continue maintaining them.
So Seth, as it stands, they Noctua will not let you put in gene IDs that are not already there, right?
It does actually allow.
I mean, that's sort of one of the things that we go back and forth on. And so there's actually some settings in the gulp file. So, or if you're using, like, if you're running off the command line, there's settings you can actually add to make it more or less permissive. But as, yeah, essentially we try to use that as a check against people just putting craziness in, because when you put craziness in, it's really, it's a little bit harder to get it back out again.
So I pretty much just use whatever the defaults were.
The defaults I think are a little bit safer. Okay. I think that's where we last landed on that. There are some cases where some fields may allow a slightly more permissive attitude, but we've tried to keep them standardized.
Mm-hmm. So I'll work with you on getting the Rabdopsis and Rice.
Okay.
And are we able to have all the other ontologies that we need?
So right now it loads the Go ones and I've created our own Plantium Noctua OWL file that imports in PO, TO, and EO.
PO, TO, and EO?
Yep.
And Go.
Go was already there.
Go was already there. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I mentioned it to Seth. There's a bug where I have to import Go in from our Plantium Noctua OWL file. It won't let me put in multiple ones in the startup.yaml.
Yeah, we should create a ticket for that if I didn't add it already.
Right.
I think I mentioned it on a separate ticket, but I didn't create a separate one.
Okay, cool.
I think you're right. It's just parsing. It puts it as a comma and then tries to read it as one.
Well, what it is, it's the gulp file pass through for the variables, which doesn't actually deal very well with space delimited sets, so it's I know exactly where that will be, but okay. we can fix that.
Okay.
Right. And another one was another bug that we were looking at, not the bug actually, it has to be updated or connected somehow, was to import an existing annotation from Amiga. So click on the Create Noctua. I think there was an
option. You can do that on the Go version, but I don't know if that's hooked up in here, is it?
What is that?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand what you're asking for.
Whether you can import an existing annotation from Amigo. Right, that's what you were asking, Pankaj?
Yep.
I was looking at this yesterday on the Go version. I can't remember how you do it, though. I thought it was under model.
It's under workbenches.
Oh, it's under workbenches. Okay. And how do you do it? Function companion.
Yeah, so there's been a few ways of doing it. So function companion is fine. So essentially once you log in, what you're able to do is sort of pass control temporarily to some Amigo widgets, which will allow you to browse annotations. You click on a bunch, you hit sort of re-import back, and there's a little Noctua manager within that widget that sort of assembles the command stream, sends it back to Noctua, and passes control mm-hmm. back to Noctua. So we've made it so it's very easy to sort of create these little widgets for whatever you need. And in fact, they're treated as separate plugins that can be done pretty much on the fly. So when you're logged in, just, you know, on your model, you go up to workbenches.
Okay, and maybe you could just walk us through it here. So do those widgets have to be installed in our Amigo yet, or they're there?
They should be there by default. I believe you can add others. So do you have a Noctua instance you're looking at, or are you looking at the public Go one?
This is the Plantium Noctua. Yeah, you can't see my screen?
I'm sorry. I was on the wrong page for Zoom.
So I'm on the function companion. This is the Plantium Noctua.
This one doesn't have that connectivity. You should go to the noctua.berkeley.org.
It does, it's still connected to the dev solar instance, so there's not many annotations there.
Yeah. You can try seeing what happens if you...
There's a Rabdopsis ones there, though.
Yeah. You can try removing that aspect filter.
Okay. Ah, okay, good. Nice.
Okay, I don't know. This might break, but like, let's find out what happens. Yeah,
let's test it and see.
So function companion is designed to map function terms over, but we're not using function terms anymore. So this is going to get weird. So let's see what happens. Why don't you just go ahead and click one of these?
Okay.
Sorry, go back.
That didn't work.
Why is it trying to go to local?
Check the box. There we go.
And then
go ahead and click import.
Yeah. Giving me an error message here. Let me try it again.
No, I think there's just something wired wrong here. It could be because we're not using function here. I'd have to check to see what's going on. And check your wiring as well. But essentially what that does is it brings in the whole annotation as is. So Noctua, you know, is the sort of the modeling use for what's going on is sort of function as core to that. So it essentially tries to lift this out and take it, you know, as a whole and including evidence. It puts in some basic relations.
So it is, there's nothing showing up under ontology aspects. So like you say, it's all wired just to be on function.
For the function companion, yes. There's I believe there's an analog for, I guess we never turned that one on. We have a couple of other companions floating around, but in this case, I think that it's actually not the fact that you're not having function. I think there's actually an issue with the wiring. It's not able to do the kickback for some reason.
I thought it was not working.
I just checked the log. There's nothing in the log that I'm seeing, but.
What? Oh, no. If I click there, it doesn't do anything.
I mean, I think that might be part of that. If that's not working, there's wiring issues.
Yeah. Okay. So that's something we'll flag. I have a couple of other questions, but more of kind of a general sense. So if we are finished, do you have other questions you want to ask, Pankaj?
No, I'm just fine. I just wanted to know how to get that thing work.
Yeah. So I have a question. We talked last week about the users and who's going to be at the workshop. So I have a couple questions about the workshop. First of all, are we going to, so we have a very brief outline of the agenda here, and are we in agreement that we're going to do this on the Plantium version of the Noctua, or are we using the Go version, or are we using both? Because it's
for the workshop
in terms of like writing out, you know, the demo and figuring out this demo and planning the SOP, I kind of need to know which tool we're going to be using and who's going to be doing it.
So where's I think there is a mix of both plant and non-plant people.
Okay, so here's the list of people who are coming. We have about 25 people. So all the people with the yes here.
Yeah.
I mean, since it's the Go Consortium meeting, we'll be using Go. I mean...
But the problem was Go doesn't have all the Rhabdopsis and rice.
I mean, the Go Consortium meeting is the first 3 days, and then we were going to... I mean, this is kind of important to clarify right now, so that everybody's sort of on the same page.
Isn't that
why we're creating this Plantium version of it?
Why don't we... I mean, I think we want to stick with the Go annotation in the first round. Whether we use both... the non-Planty folks would use the Go version of Noctua, and Planty may use the other one. But let me talk to Chris about it, and then I can clarify which one. Yeah,
we should maybe have a meeting with Chris and discuss how we're going to run this workshop, because it's not clear to me, you know, what the goals of the workshop are, which I think is really important to kind of clarify.
Immediate goal is to converse people on on putting their hands on how to use Noctua for the curation and get a feedback on what they are liking, what they are not liking, and what other functionalities do they need. But on the other hand, is the following day is the pathway jamboree. So the goal, another goal is that if we can curate the genes that are going in the next day's pathways, selected pathways, we annotate those here as well in the first round. If I can have some convincing with Chris, we may be able to pull it off in a way that even though people are from non-plant world, they all just work on plants for that particular day.
It seems to me that it would make sense to use the Plantium version if, you know, we're running and we're trying to get our tool working and then people could see what it did. I was discussing this yesterday with Lenore from TARE.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people on this list are going to be very familiar with Noctua already and they're actually using it. And then there's going to be people who have never used it.
Yep.
So we're going to have kind of a wide range of experience and a wide range of backgrounds for this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the other question I had was, we talked last week about having to make sure that all the users were in the user.yaml file.
Yeah.
And so what we need to do, I need to know who needs.
Which Noctua instance we are going to be using.
Right.
And we will ask all of them to sign up before coming.
Yeah. So my question is there two different user.yaml files?
There very likely will be when this is all said and done. So what we have in the users.yaml file right now is it's sort of general user information for everyone who's associated with the Go, including things like ORCIDs. As well, in this file, we put permissions for various applications that are provided by the Go. So this right now practically means Term Genie, which is more or less defunct at this point, and Noctua. As well, there's also the ability to have sort of different Noctua instances encoded in the users.yaml file. So it's possible to actually go either way here and either overload the users YAML file and provide, I believe, Plantium users for a Plantium instance. But it
I have my own users.yaml, and it's stripped down. It's basically you, me, Chris, Seth, or Pockage, and Lowell, and Austin, I think is about it.
And that might be an easier way to run in the long run if we don't want to have sort of, conflicting member lists. It is nice to be able to sort of have control over who has access to your instance and be able to be the main person who accepts or declines pull requests for new users.
And for the workshop, we could turn the local authentication back on and just create a bunch of generic accounts.
That doesn't work real well in practice, I've found. Okay. You can do it. And so there are generic accounts and various ways of generating sort of generic and temporary accounts within the system, even on a live system. But in general, it's been nice for people to sort of take ownership of the models and show them around and take them back to sort of, you know, their model organism or their institution and show it to other people and work on them more. And so when you have the sort of the group generic accounts, it's just sort of, it's just a bit mushier and people don't quite take the ownership of them they have when they have them created privately. So we've done both in the past, but the generic accounts have been a little bit more problematic. You can do either, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
It almost seems like maybe it'd be, if we could, one idea might be to manage the user.yaml file the way we do the DBX ref file, you know, where we pull a version of it, add things, push it back to your...
I think that is how Go does it. We just haven't...
Yeah. But I mean, so you were saying, though, that you had created this separate one. I mean, it seems like in our...
Well, I just took Go's and then just took everyone out that I didn't recognize.
So, but we'll have to get all these people on that list if we're going to use the Plantium version, right?
Yes.
And so is there a way we can... I'm not even like clear where this user.yaml file lives, because it'd be good to go through this list have a list of who's coming and whether they're on what list. And I don't want to have this all happening like the morning of the workshop. I'm trying to get this kind of organized ahead of time so we know we have the pieces there to run the demo and do the workshop.
So what we have for the Go workshops is typically we have a form in Google Docs that people fill in the form. And basically anyone who's interested who hasn't already put in their Noctua credentials and ORCID ID or whatever, they're asked to just fill out this form, this Google Doc that has all the necessary fields. Mm-hmm. That's put into a spreadsheet, and then we just add them manually and just do a cycle on the authentication server. And that goes really smooth. But the past few workshops, it's been pretty easy to basically a few days before the meeting, a week before the meeting, you just send out an email and just hammer people. Like if you're on the list, just go to this link. People mostly seem to have trouble getting their ORCIDs in and figuring out what their ORCIDs are. But beyond that, it's a pretty painless process. The other thing that we do need at this point also is GitHub accounts. So,
right now I have it set up so they have to be GitHub or ORCID, right?
So we need GitHub.
It could be either. Because of the way the Go works and to work on the ontology in the Go, you essentially need to be a GitHub user. We're using GitHub pretty much exclusively for our authentication at this point. You can use ORCID for authentication, but we've not really encouraged that. We've really been trying to force people onto GitHub because it just makes everything so much easier. As well, there's functionality now in Noctua where you can actually tie models to GitHub tickets.
Oh, okay.
So you can have things, you know, cross communication there, which is nice.
Going back to if I add users to users.yaml, can I just do a reload on the barista?
It's not even necessary to do a full reload. You can actually go to the user's info page, and once the user's YAML is updated on the system, you just a refresh, and that should put in, that should read the new credentials off the file system. So you don't even need to do a, you can do a prompt. Yeah. No, it's super easy. Yeah. that's all there is to say about that. We've gone back and we've had that pain point ourselves, and now you can do it hot.
Do users have to have an ORCID, or can they just have the GitHub?
So basically the purpose of the ORCID, and so if you look in the user's YAML, it's the URI for the user. And so what it is the universal unique identifier for the user. We highly, highly encourage people to use ORCIDs for that. The fact is at the end of the day, your GitHub ID is not technically unique. It is, you can move it around, you can change it. GitHub allows you to do that. So the ORCIDs really are highly encouraged. We also have a archaic system in the GOC, which is basically allowing their GOC ID, which is sort of this hacked together thing that was used traditionally to identify users in GAFs and other annotations. So it's GOC colon, a couple of letters. And so that's usable. It doesn't break the system, and you can do something like that. But I would highly encourage everyone to just get ORCIDs or some similar universal identifier.
Okay.
So it'd be nice in this version if we could have the, if people are logging in with their GitHub, if it could display their GitHub name under contributors, because you have to use your GitHub, but then it just shows the ORCID.
Well, so remember, we're just using GitHub for authentication. You can use a file on the file system and a password file. You can get in through certain types of artificial account creation. You can log in through ORCID. You can log in through GitHub. You can log in through other mechanisms as well. So one of the reasons we don't display that is because what we're really doing is there's a strict separation between authentication and authorization, right? So authentication can occur many different ways, and you can have many different conflicting usernames that are associated with authentication. So for example, if GitHub goes down for a day, which it has in the past, all of a sudden you've lost your ability to log in to Noctua. Huh. However, we allow other methods. So ORCIDs can be used as well for authentication within the system. And so in order to sort of keep that flexibility, we've kind of, there isn't such a tight integration with GitHub at this point that we've sort of tried to put that in the front. It really is just an authentication key right now.
On this, it goes to the Orc ID. Yeah, it goes to my Orc ID. And I think last time I checked, yeah, the GAF export is not working.
It's basically there's two GAF exports. There's the GAF export that occurs when you click the button GAF export,
like this
in
one.
Minerva, and that doesn't work too well. It was always sort of a demo piece. What we're actually using for the Go is a job in Jenkins that essentially periodically pulls the models from GitHub, processes them, and then produces the sort of the product GAF for all the models. And that's a much more correct system. And we're going to try to backport that back into the Minerva version, but so, that is in progress.
So that one is run on a routine basis, so people should not be looking at this GAF button. Right?
Yeah, the intention for the GAF that's built into Minerva is essentially to be sort of a on-the-fly check. It's not really intended at this point anymore to be sort of the main product. The main product is coming out of the Jenkins job.
So can we disable it?
Yeah. From...
You can certainly remove the item from the menu easily.
Because it seems like if it doesn't work, there doesn't seem like much point to have it.
It again, it's not incorrect. It's just not the full reasoned information.
Mm-hmm.
Well, except we're getting an error on it.
Yeah, except we're getting an error. A proxy error. On both of those. Both if I do it through the menu or if I do it through the button on the previous page. It's not working. Can we export as OWL?
It will work.
It exports something. But the GAF export is definitely not working. And so, Seth, you're saying they have this Jenkins jobs that runs in the background. So is that actually on our Noctua GitHub as well?
No, it's purely on our Jenkins. It's something that's a work in progress, but we can give you the recipe that we're running. It currently requires a BlazeGraph instance to be run separately as well, as I recall. So basically what you have at some point in the not so distant past, we switched over the core of the Minerva part of Noctua, which is the sort of the logic engine in there. And we went over from an in-memory model to using BlazeGraph to really hyper-simplify what's going on in there. So essentially what we do is we have a dump of that is then picked up by... No, I take that back. But it is going into a separate BlazeGraph instance that's doing the reasoning and producing the GAFs. And it's being run as a job. So let me go find the job on our Jenkins. And let's see.
And while you're doing that, I want to ask Justin and maybe Seth too this question. It'd be really helpful if we could change the logo here to the Plantium logo so that in case we have, you know, when you have two open, we change the little tab here to say Plantium, but it's actually kind of confusing because they look exactly the same.
Yeah, if you just give me an image, I can replace that pretty easily.
Okay, that would be helpful, I think.
Then, I guess I can just grab the same image from the main site, right?
I have lots of versions of the Plantium logo if you want. I have
reported. Yeah, just send me whichever one you want and I can replace that.
I mean, do you guys agree that that wouldn't be a bad thing to do?
I think. Yeah, no, I was going to try and change the whole theme so it kind of matched our Amigo site too with the orange instead of the blue.
But... Make it as ugly as ours. It's just so that
it was lower on my priority than getting the stuff kind of working.
Yeah, absolutely. I know it's not a high priority. I think all these other issues are a lot more important at this point. So, was that Marie? Didn't hear what you said.
It was not me.
Oh, okay.
things that we need to fix before we need boxes
on the side? Or are we just going to stick with like the
gold? No, I think we are going to stick with this. We cannot bring in new boxes because that needs a little bit more work. So people, if they have to add it as from add individual or add Anton, I guess. So PO, you would be able to find PO in the add anything.
Yeah, yeah, like this pops up.
Yeah.
And the TO is popping up. That's nice.
Oh, it looks like the CO ones are too.
CO ones are too now, yeah.
And you have...
not sure why that is. Is it calling those from the solar stuff?
I'm sorry, I was digging around this job, but Chris has hidden it in a make file somewhere, so I'm trying to figure out where it is.
Plantium Noctua, I took out like all the CO ones, but they're still showing up when we do add individual. Is that coming from solar?
CO? I'm sorry, where?
If you look at the little screen. Those are the plant-specific crop ontology.
Right.
But I'm not pulling them in my OWL file, but they are in the
are you sure they're not included as some kind of include in another OWL file you're loading? Because that doesn't
I don't think so, because I only had it load the Go, and then PO, TO, and EO, which I didn't think... I think the CO ones connect to TO.
But if the database is connected to the Noctua is connected to the database, is it reading from there directly?
Well, but my thought was is that what Minerva loads is separate from what Amigo from what Solar has.
Oh, absolutely.
And it looks like this is pulling from Solar, not the Minerva.
It is absolutely so. There is no connection as far as the autocomplete is concerned. There is no connection to Minerva. It only connects. It only connects to...
So like that wheat leaf width trait, that's not in Minerva, but is in the solar. So is there going to be a problem if they try to add that?
I don't think so. Go give it a whack. So basically what the issue is going to be is Minerva's not going to be able to resolve the label.
Yeah.
Oh, well, right? So we have a error there.
Yep.
So essentially what's going on here is when you're sending the ID back to Minerva, it's trying to operate on it, and it sort of has all of its ontologies in its world. And if it can't identify it or put it anywhere, it'll, depending on the settings, will either try to go out and identify it from an external source. But I don't think it's wired up for that right now. So it's essentially just choking on it because it has no idea what you're talking about. So you do need to try to keep the ontology loads for your Solar and the ontology loads for Minerva more or less in sync.
Okay, so I should add the CO ones back to my Plantium Noctua import?
The Minerva import, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Well, do we have other things we want to discuss? Do you have something you wanted to share with us, or you're still looking for it?
No, I think basically what I have is it's wrapped up in a make file. It's wrapped up three ways, but it's basically we have a command that does this. So we can share a bit more about that. And it might be actually good to touch bases with Chris about our current export mechanism.
We have another meeting later this week and a day or two with Chris, and maybe Seth can take part too.
Yeah, that would be good. He's gone until Friday, by the way. So the earliest you're going to be able to get a hold of him is Friday.
Okay.
He's at a hackathon.
Yeah. Okay, and he sent a message yesterday and said to make sure that any of these issues that we find, we need to make sure that they get onto the tracker, onto our Plantium Noctua tracker.
Yeah.
So I think we've identified a few things that we need to sort out.
Yeah. Also, I think you definitely want to touch bases with him again about, I mean, I don't know who's running the Noctua workshop at the Go meeting, but it would be definitely good to sort of get an idea of who's going to be working on what species primarily. So right. One of the things for the Go annotation
we want to focus on and so on.
Right. So for people producing annotations for the Go, they generally are going to need to be within the Go pipeline system. So that would mean the main Noctua, the main Go Noctua instance. If they're then taking their annotations, processing them, and then sort of feeding them back to the gene ontology through some other process, mm-hmm. there's that too, but that would be an additional step for the institution. So that just needs to be coordinated, whoever uses what instance, just to make sure that Go annotations are getting back to the Go by some way or another.
Okay. So let me talk to Chris about it.
I
think.
And apologies. Yeah, he is out of commission until Friday.
Yeah, and I think Chris and Susie are probably more and more used to working with Noctua, so they will lead, but we will help on our side.
It'll be Chris. Yeah, Susie is not actually familiar with Noctua.
All right, but she will be around.
Oh yeah, she'll be around. Yeah,
Susie's planning to attend. It looked like yeah.
Yeah, I think it's more as a student of rather than teacher of.
Yeah. But David Hill's going to be here, I think, right?
Hopefully David Hill and Kimberly Van Auken will be right. More or less leading the show.
Yeah, David Hill would be there until the Noctua and not for the Pathway.
Yeah, a lot of people are not staying for Monday. So, okay, well, I think maybe we should wrap up here. It's already 9:45.
Yep. So I would say then next week, try back again to make sure that we have the things ready. And in the meantime, I'll go and talk to Chris about the Noctua.
Yeah, maybe we can meet with Chris. Maybe we could arrange something on Monday. Right.
And Seth, do you guys have any Noctua kind of a demo or a kind of SOPs on how to curate?
Yes, we do. So if you go to... it's not terrific, but if you go to noctua.geneontology.org or probably your own instance, I don't think it really matters because it's just the embedded documentation. So if you're on the landing page of Noctua one way or another, more in the upper right corner, and if you open that, there's a bunch of documentation, there's videos. So for example, there's like your Go curator should read the Noctua quick start, which gives you a quick guide of what's going on. There's all sorts of different bits of documentation there for people who are new to the system to try to get oriented.
So I've been kind of working through this. It seems like a lot of these instructions are out of date though. Like the current Go Noctuas are different from what it says here, but I understand everything is like evolving, but.
Yeah, it'll be vaguely out of date as far as the versioning of Noctua goes, but there shouldn't be too much in the way of the modeling. Well, so modeling best practices have shifted around a little bit. And I think there might be, let's see, where's another guide for that?
Here's the video demos.
Yeah, the video, the version of Noctua in the video is a little bit older. But again, it shouldn't be too noticeable. And the fundamentals for all of these things should be more or less correct. I don't think we have anything up here that's actually actively wrong. That word is wrong here. I need to... That's actually very old documentation I'm seeing here, but it's after the quick start guide. The quick start stuff should all be more or less
right
up to date.
Yeah.
Although the fact it says check back on the site throughout 2016 to see progress.
Yeah.
Okay, we got to go clean that up.
But Lol, you are producing one anyhow. So
yeah, and it doesn't say current state anymore, and so on, and
yep.
Yeah, so
excellent.
Some things to clean up, and these are some, I've been sort of digging into these things. But,
I'll open a ticket for that right after this call. That's okay. Hilariously out of date on our end.
Today, Seth. That was a big help.
Oh, no worries. No worries at all. I'm usually around most days. So if anyone has any questions, just ping me on Skype or email or whatever.
Yeah, I think I might need your help to try and figure out the function companion thing failing.
Yeah, if you can I can probably figure that out remotely. I just need access to the clients in the system from the outside if you've got that available.
I'm not sure what you mean. I mean, if you go to the noctua-dev.plantium.org, your account
should be active. I can see all that. Okay, cool. Okay, I'll take a look at that too when I get in.
Let me know if you need info from the server on like what's in my startup.yaml or whatever.
No, for the wire, for the function companion, it should be pretty quick. I'll let you know.
Yeah, I tried using the Chrome inspector and I didn't really see anything, but
yeah, but I know exactly what it's thinking of.
Okay.
I know it's all of this little opinions and quirks, so I'll be able to track that down real fast. And okay. If I can't, I'll let you know. It'll be a mystery. Okay, I'll talk to you probably. It'll probably be after lunch, though, when I finally get settled in.
All right, no problem. My kid's staying home sick from school, so I may not answer right away, but let me know.
Oh, no worries at all. Okay, I'll ping you later on, though. Either
okay.
Way. Okay, cool. Talk to you all later on.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Thanks.
No problem. Bye-bye.
Bye. So we're all set now? Thanks.
Well, a little progress.
Yeah, Lowell, if you can just send me a new whatever icon replacement you want, that's a pretty easy, trivial fix.
Okay.
I was going to work on the theming, trying to change the colors stuff up, but I don't think I'm going to have time to do that.
No, I don't think we need to invest time on doing those kinds of things. I think functionality is the major thing right now.
I agree.
Don't worry about the icon and color theming because...
Well, the icon will take me literally like 2 minutes.
Yeah, that's fine.
The reason why I think it'd be good to have that is because if we are working with both of them, it'll be a little less confusing to the user. Yep.
Just change the icon. Don't worry about the color. In that.
Yeah.
Okay, I could even probably put a header at the top that says something like, or, you know, above that black work bar, or the black bar, where it says something like, this is the Plentium instance or something like that.
Kind of like we did for Dev.
Yeah.
Instead of calling it Noctua, just call it Plantua or something.
Plantium Noctua. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
All right.
I got to get off phone.
All right. And Austin and Murray, I think you got some feedback for your work as well.
Yeah, we have plenty to work on. I think when Marie's here, we will have a very productive couple days.
Good. Excellent. So good to hear. And you guys are making good progress. Thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
See you later.